Shop and Maniacs. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer. Hey, Chris, how are you today?
Couldn't be better, really. Well, I could be a lot better in a lot of ways. My arms are still broken, so that sucks. But it's funny how the body works. You know, like I really can't almost every day feel better in some minute kind of way. It's just cool to see the body working that way. You know, my physical therapist is like, your body's actually like, this is weird. But I mean, I guess it's not weird to people. This is weird to me for some reason. Your body is actually like really busy fixing stuff. Like it's doing work. It's like your whole body's aware of it and it's changing what it's, you know, it's different than a normal day. This is like a repair day, which is kind of funny, you know. I guess that there's a way to segue that probably in what I was kind of hoping we could talk about today. I don't know. We'll just see. Sometimes I like these episodes where I can just talk to you about stuff and not instead of answer a bunch of questions, which we'll do next time, but just kind of talk about what's on our mind. Speaking of like what kind of day we're going to have, let's say a particular kind of day was a brand new project day. I feel like these are so fun that developers force themselves into situations like this on purpose sometimes. I feel like some side projects are, I just want to greenfield something.
Oh, yeah. Just like no rules, no one tell me what to do, no legacy to care about. You're just new file, go.
Right? Yeah. So that's what's, I mean, so let's call this, let's just do it. Let's call this show Greenfield. And greenfield is a metaphor, so if that sounds weird to you or you've never heard that term before, it means like I'm about to build something. There's no barn on the land. There's not a skyscraper already there. It's just a field of green, and it's on me to, you know, dig the foundation and build what's going to happen there. So it's just a metaphor. And it can be, it's sometimes used even in existing apps. Like if you're going to build a new feature and it doesn't touch a ton of the rest of the app, that might be kind of, you might say that's a greenfield feature on a product. But it's, you know, more commonly it's used, I'd say, to like, you're just starting from absolute scratch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, maybe you have like a, I don't know, maybe you're on a team and it's, we all do React. So your next greenfield has to be React to like fit into the thing, but I don't know, but it could also be like, no, now's the chance to like experiment with Svelte or something new, you know, like maybe this is the time. So, but yeah, I don't know. It kind of depends on your situation, right?
So. Yeah. Well, let's cover different situations on purpose, you know? And so I had some ideas of like, you know, like sites we could theoretically talk about because I don't think it's fair to say, oh, if I was starting a greenfield project today, I would use React. You know, like that's not, I mean, maybe that is true for you.
I think
but
most
that's
of the world
weird.
Operates like that, but yeah.
It feels a little weird to choose a technology with no parameters whatsoever. Like you haven't even heard what we're about to say. So what? You know, like,
React. Yes. React.
Yeah. But, it's true. I think a lot of people do. It could be okay if you're just learning or if you're just screwing around or whatever to pick a technology and then build something with that technology. I'm not trying to crap on that. But, like, if you're building something kind of for real, usually there's a little bit of, like, evaluation phase that happens first and you end up kind of picking technology and that. And, like, let's forget the world. Let's talk about me and you. What would we do, you know? And I thought, well, there's all kinds of different, you know, in their... When I brought this up, I already had a bunch of ideas. And then you're like, well, somebody put a lot of thought into this already, or at least categorizing the types of things that you can build on the web. And there's this article called Application Holotypes, which is kind of an awesome word, but isn't kind of the point of that to different.
Yeah, it's Jason Miller from Preact. And he kind of comes around and is just trying to give I'm very much a fan of this. Like, you know, rather than just saying there's apps and sites, like that means very little to me. That means like literally nothing to me.
It's been a long-standing problem. It's like, it feels like when you say that in people's head, they get it. You're like, oh yeah, some sites are like kind of app-like, you know, like Facebook or whatever. And some sites are like kind of blog-like, like my personal blog. And I get that there's a very clear distinction between those two things. But then once you start defining it and trying to draw lines, it gets real muddy real quick.
So. It's non-binary, I would describe it as.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, an e-commerce site totally just wrecks your whole dichotomy. So, So Jason sort of comes up with this idea of like holotypes. Like there's maybe different kinds of websites, similar to there's different kinds of cars or something like that. That's how I think of it. Like there's SUVs, there's compacts, there's, you know, scooters now.
Sure. And this is just a crack at it. I mean, I think he's done a pretty good job here. But as soon as you read all the way through it, you're like, I feel like the well, actually finger goes up, or like, I can think of something that doesn't fit into one of your holotypes, you know?
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, and I found myself doing that, but then it was just like, but it's not even worth the tweet. It's so like minute, you know. But he goes through like and gives like an example of a holotype, and then he gives like maybe like an implementation like idea, like a single page app or something like that.
Right.
So yes, the big buckets are social networking destinations like a Facebook, social media app like a Instagram, like the actual, I guess, app you'd use, you know, mm-hmm. Not like a portal, more like an app or something. Again, like the distinction there is very muddy for me, but that's fine. Storefronts, Amazon, Best Buy, Newegg.
Sure. E-commerce.
Content website, CNN, yeah. CSS Tricks, my personal blog.
New York Times.
New York Times. Pin websites?
Isn't that funny? Like, even the distinction there is crazy. Like, I can't compare my site to the New York Times. Are you crazy? They're nothing. Yeah, but anyway. But I get their holotypes. They're holotypes.
Yeah, big buckets. Big buckets. PIM applications. I don't know what PIM stands. Personal Information Management. So maybe this is like Gmail.
Salesforce.
Salesforce. I'm even probably like a health app, you know, like my something with like personal information, so you got like a security layer kind of thing, or maybe there's rich text. I don't, you know, productivity apps, Google Docs, sort of like you click a field and you're editing in the thing. Media players like Spotify, graphical editor like Figma, media editor like he has Soundtrap, which I haven't really heard of, but like you could think of like a, I don't know, logic in the browser.
Something that helps you edit photos and stuff. Wouldn't that be like a graphical editor? I don't know.
Yeah.
But this is, he's using a lot of audio stuff here. So maybe it's like bringing that type of editor. Is
yeah, this would be more like, I use an app called Zencaster for another podcast. And it's just like a record in
the
web.
We should probably look into switching to that at some point. It's so good.
It's just a neat tool. I still, you know, anyway, don't quite fully trust a website to
like, I know, it's like, a leap. It's like, a leap.
Anyway, but it's good. Actually, it's pretty good for what I use it for. Engineering tools is a code sandbox, you know, code pen, you know, these kind of like type in a thing and then it produces like a output. I mean, I could probably go pretty far in like the, I don't know if that's its own holotype exactly. Like, how is that different than maybe like a productivity app, really? But anyway, let's just say it's different. Immersive games and casual games. He kind of put two different levels, like a, you know, like you think of like a Halo shooter would be like very different than like whatever my like the click a button.
Jumpy and platformer.
See
thing.
A color. Yeah. So, yeah, yeah.
Well, fascinating, you know, and this is to add some nuance to the conversation of, is this a site or is this an app, you know, and it's just Jason's take on the thing. And so it's easy to have, you know, your own experiences be like, well, I might combine these two and this one's too broad and that type of thing. And that's fine. But it's just to say that now that we maybe have some like little more nuanced of categorization, then we can think of what kind of stack or what kind of technologies would we pick to build the things that are in that bucket. And even right. then I'm like, is that,
I React. Don't
know. Yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh. It's funny though. And because technologies do sometimes cross boundaries in weird ways, because like I'm sure of all the React enthusiasts out there listening, you might think like, well, React actually is kind of a good, like, for example, we use it at CodePen to build a lot of it, and I don't necessarily regret it. I think it's been a pretty good choice for us. But then there's tools like Gatsby that take what React can do and make it like very, I'd say, pretty appropriate for a blog. I mean, feel free to disagree there, but that's kind of their bread and butter, is like, this is for making static sites too, which means that now this one technology, React, kind of can fit into two holotype buckets pretty easily. Weird.
Yeah. Well, and if you had like, I don't know, if you think about like you built your big app, the big holotype, the productivity app in React, because it made a good, that made a good fit. And then you're like, okay, we got to do the blog now, the marketing blog.
Yikes.
Well, we'll probably need like buttons. We'll probably need, you know, headings. You know what? We have those components from the other site, you know, already written in React. So maybe we should just chuck out React components, you know? So to me, that makes sense. I mean, it's maybe not, you know, like, what would you
your
say?
Ideal stack, just because
my ideal stack, but it totally makes sense, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So, like,
well, let's get a little personal quick and then keep returning to these holotype buckets just for fun to change speed a little bit. Like, let's start really small. Let's say DaveRupert.com. You know, we've talked about it before. It's Jekyll now. It doesn't sound like you regret that decision in any way, but let's just say, would you right now, if you were greenfielding the thing, not necessarily a rewrite, but like I'm starting this blog from scratch and I intend to run it for a couple of years and it's my personal site. What would you go with, you think?
I would do 1110 right out of the gate, I think. And that's, you know, 1110 is still like on, or it's about to launch version 0.9, I think. So it's still,
would you pick it because you're still like writing blog posts in Markdown, right? Would you stick that with the data as the data source still?
Yeah, I would. But, you know, if I was, you know, it's funny because these are still the same holotype, right? But like, but if I was in a CSS tricks situation, I would be looking at something headless like Sanity or Contentful or something like that. Like, just because.
Why?
Yeah. I think, well, I just, you know, it's sort of like a factor of scale, like at one blog post a week or, you know. I literally write about 40 blog posts a year or something. I think I have some data,
sure.
You know, that can kind of be like, that's my output threshold. You know, if I'm writing that many, like, you know, it's not, you know, that's not burdensome, but like if I'm 10 posts a day or something or five or three, even, you know, that's 900 posts, you know.
So why does the scale factor into this? Is that's like too many markdown files?
I think compile time, literally just compile time.
Okay. Has there ever been a moment where you're like, I wish all these posts were in a database instead of markdown?
Not for me, not on my personal blog, just because I mean, it feels portable. Does that make sense? Like a folder full of posts that are dated and,
oh yeah,
you know,
no,
like it's,
I mean,
just,
I
written
get
in
it.
Markdown.
I like
it feels
that.
Portable. Like,
yeah.
Cause I could, what's funny is like, I've tried to flip my blog to 1110. But I'm a little too bound into Jekyll just for weird stuff because I'm using things like Jekyll's data layer and Jekyll's, you know, weird kind of template tags or whatever.
It turns a day project into a week kind of thing. And
totally. And I like started and it was like, and this is something sort of the, you know, nature of the beast with like projects you know, compiling locally is like, I can't even get or 1110 to like spit out my site. I have to like go through every single error it hates, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like, I haven't even seen the fruit of my,
so why the switch then? What does 1110 do that?
Purely speed. Node would be one thing. Like,
yeah,
the speed of Node.
It's JavaScript based. So you like that?
I think, yeah, stays in like my developer wheelhouse probably a little bit better than like Ruby, even though I would probably consider myself a Rubyist. But Ruby is maybe just not super threaded, maybe not super great at like munging through hundreds of different files, you know, and a lot of my situations probably conditioned too on my Windows switch. So like it's a lot slower. It's like 7, 10, 18 seconds to compile my blog, you know? So like,
really?
That's not rad.
So you hit save on a blog post. Do you even have it set up to be like, don't compile on save? Cause it's
no, I do. I just have it compile on save. And then Jekyll has live reload now. So that's cool. But I would purely do it for speed. I think I'd get some speed gains, but WSL2 is coming out. That's going to
speed and developer convenience stuff. Okay. That's cool.
It's going to change my life.
I'll throw some curveballs at you though. Let's say all of a sudden it's not just you anymore. There's three three authors of this blog. Is that what does that change? Do you think sticking with the markdown is fine there? What would you do for the author? Just front matter it?
Probably. Yeah, I think I could go pretty far with 11D in that situation. Mm-hmm. But again, it's sort of like velocity, you know, like is it three people still posting once a week? Or is it three people are now going to try to make this a business and turn it on and do it 3 days a week or whatever, you know? I think that would change my.
So now we're still here. And you're like, these two people you hired just aren't developers at all. And would you be like, well, too bad. Just send it to me in Word or Dropbox paper or something. Then I'll drop it into the site. Or, you know, like you're in a situation now, like you're building like a mini client site with multiple contributors. You've realized, wow, this Jamstack thing is still kind of cool. I like 11D or whatever, but I need kind of like a contribution model that works.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, like that would be a major hang up. Like I don't want more work, Chris. Like,
yeah.
That's like what I'm optimizing for.
Don't send me your Word document to post on the site. I can't.
I mean, I can do that. But you know, Netlify CMS, like that's a pretty cool piece of technology just to like hook into my Git repo and give somebody a UI who needs a UI. And that's totally fine that they would, you know, like I don't want to be elitist or something like that.
Do you like that it exists, or do you think you would actually reach for it?
I think I would actually reach for it. I would probably consider it. I think I think most marketing sites, or which maybe this falls into a content site, right? The same holotype, but like, most of those are basically like static sites. They could live as static sites, and
sure,
a lot of them we put on CMSs, and you do all that work just so people can like edit it and stuff like that. So I would try the Netlify route. It's sort of like what does Jeremy Keith always say, like the principle of least power or whatever.
Use that, but it's also like a principle of the HTML spec or something, or like there's like a standards body that like has that.
Yeah. Or it's just mantra. This idea, like use the least powerful tool that gets the job done, sort of like, and that, so like, it's like less moving parts. And, but you know, at the same time now, compiling a static site, I feel like most, you know, marketing sites and a lot of that could be that. However, you know, you go a little bit bigger, 200, 300 person company, you know, it's like, are you really managing all your content through a static site, or should you have like Craft CMS, which is also another great product? Like,
right.
You know, like maybe you do need to grow up at some point. And I still think that's valuable. So I'm not.
So you would really reach for Netlify CMS in some kind of like three person static site still makes sense situation. And then maybe a step beyond that with maybe possibly hundreds of people and a more complex CMS craft.
Complex CMS, editorial flow is a big one, right? Like, I mean, how much do you use draft posts on CSS Tricks, you know?
All the time.
That's a huge part of your business.
Yeah, right? Netlify CMS does have a editorial workflow thing that you just either flip on or flip off. So it would be off if you just don't care and you're just like, I just made the edit, just go, you know? Or on if you want to be able to like save it and have different steps of review and stuff like that. So they've thought about it, which is pretty cool. You mentioned the brochure sites and the editability of things, though. Let's like switch gears to that for a minute. Let's say it literally is just like, you know, one of those scrolly marketing pages. You know, it's got lots of like three boxes in a row. It's got a hero. It's got headlines. It's got paragraphs of copy. But stuff changes. You know, you're delivering this for somebody who wants to be able to edit the thing. You know, I'm sure you've been in that situation for client work before. What kind of tooling, what kind of stack for that kind of situation?
We recently had really good success with craft. Just because craft kind of has this, I forget what they call it. Blocks. Is that what they call it?
Putting you in a kind of page builder situation where you're dragging stuff around.
You can kind of like drag and like build a page, right? And it's like actually and then you just like specify what component that little block maps to. I'm sure Gutenberg sort of does the same thing. And like we had a client and we made a design system for him, handed it off. And then like a month later or whatever, they're like, hey, we like took all your components and made a page. And it was like, great. Like those are your components. This is awesome. It looks great. It spit out right. Like,
yeah,
like you did a good job on the content sizing and everything. Like, this is great. Like,
cool.
That's the sort of stuff like, you know, and like if we were on the static site thing, I don't think like, even as smart as maybe Netlify CMS is, like, I don't think it's like, yeah, drag this component in and now you're using that, you know?
Just that word drag, like, it makes a big difference here, you know? It's putting you in the, like, well, should we be looking at Squarespace? Should I be looking at, like, a page builder for WordPress, like a Divi kind of thing? Like, what if I teach them Webflow? Yeah, or what if, I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, again, I think it's like, what do people feel comfortable in? You know, craft is very developer. Like it's that like I'm editing fields in a database feel.
Yeah.
But the live preview part of it is super good. Like it's like click a button, you're live previewing your changes as you like drag stuff around. Mm-hmm. That's going to be.
Gosh, that dragging thing gets me. As I also think of like a tool like Mavo. Have you seen that? Like
No.
Mavo.io. There's been versions of this over time forever, I think, which is kind of like just put some attributes on some HTML and we'll give you like a UI will appear over those elements after you log in that allows you to edit them in a way. And it has all kinds of clever stuff you can do. But the idea is, you know, click edit, edit the paragraph, hit save, done. You've edited the website in a way. Lee Veroux built this thing, I think.
Yeah. And so it's intelligently built here.
And there's clever stuff, though. There's like, well, what if you want to upload a photo? Well, it's got stuff for that. Well, what if it's a repeating field? Well, it's got stuff for that. You know, but it doesn't necessarily give you like drag this in, drag this out. I'm not sure where the line is with Mavo. I think it's kind of fuzzy in a way. But and then where does that data go? Well, what's cool, it has all these extensions, like you can send that data to GitHub or Dropbox or what, but the data store.
Have you seen Vapid?
I don't think so.
I should write a post about
you.
It's
should.
Vapid.com. It's a weight shift project. So Naz Hamid and Scott Robbins.
I've seen this.
Sorry, Scott. But it's I should write a post for CSS Tricks about it. But you just write HTML and then you hit like Vapid in your command line and then it generates the CMS based on your HTML.
Oh, like, nice. Like Perch does that.
So yeah, and so it's just like boom, like it's up and like it's running on your machine and then you like hit like Vapid deploy and it goes out to deploys it out.
So you have an index.html file that has these special Vapid
headlines
in them,
intro,
and then you edit and then what happens? Does it make? Do you have like index.vapid.html and it compiles down to index.html or what? How does it?
Well, it creates a CMS, and so you'll get like home in your CMS, and you'll have like headline and intro, and that you can edit, and then you hit save, and that goes out to a data layer. And then I don't know if it is a static site generator on top of that, like that compiles those pages out, but I think
it'd be interesting if it wasn't, if it's like Vue or whatever, where like the HTML comes down with a bunch of stuff in it, and then JavaScript loads, gets the data, and replaces all the data in there. Maybe that's how.
Yeah, I think it makes a static page. That's sort of what I remember like last time I'm playing with it. But I think all that data is also backed in a Mongo of some kind or something. So.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by StackBit. StackBit.com/ShopTalkShow. StackBit is super cool. I swear to God. Still, so static sites, you know, this Jamstack stuff, we talk about it around here all the time. It's growing fast. Front-end developers like us, we kind of get it already. It's really fast. It's really secure. It has all these developer conveniences. You get full control over the markup, the design. But the client's part is a little trickier. You know, they're like, well, what, you know, what do you provide for them to update their content? Where's the CMS? So it feels like that's a a little bit of a hiccup in that super mainstream adoption of Jamstack in a commercial context is about solving that issue. And that's where StackBit comes in. StackBit allows you to kind of build and deploy a full Jamstack site with a static site generator and a headless CMS in just a few clicks. That's the thing about it. You know, you choose from, it's like you start with a theme. You're like, you know, and you don't have to. There's multiple ways to do this, but it's kind of like a wizard of like, I'll take this theme on this static site generator with this headless CMS. And there's work to do when you're setting that up. All you can do that probably, but it's like, wouldn't you like to just go like click, 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 and then you have it and it just deploys to your Git repo and it's ready to use. The CMS all hooked up and all that stuff already. It's pretty great. So on top of all that, StackBit just released custom themes. So now you like, if you've already built the theme, you're working on a static site generator already, including the ones above, plus like Gridsome and ViewPress and some other ones, you can like put a StackBit configuration there, stackbit.yaml file, and define the content model that your theme is already using, and then like then connect it to any of these headless CMSs. So it's pretty cool. Like you can use a part of the build process. StackBit allows you to test the strengths and weaknesses of different headless CMSs. Because of that reason, it's easy to explore the different ones, which is pretty cool, you know? So we're talking about like Forestry, Netlify CMS, Dado CMS, Contentful, that kind of thing. And the SSGs are like Hugo, Jekyll, Gatsby. You know, that's just a lot of combos there. It's all like very exciting to me. And, you know, and it just goes to your own repo, too. It's not like StackBit just helps you get it all done. But it's in the end, it's just your code, you know. So go to stackbit.com/shoptalk to feel the magic. Let us know what you think. All right. Well, so we've talked about possibilities, but let's force you to make a choice here. Making a brochure website, it needs to be pretty darn editable by clients. What are you reaching for real?
Probably on that one, probably still in craft. Just because I think this is the other part of Jason's holotype post or the counterweight to it that I think is not covered is like, what is the client comfortable with? And I think, I would be like, yeah, you know, or Trent has kind of advocated, like, I think most people just need a static site, like Netlify CMS. But like a lot of clients aren't ready to like make that jump. Like they're very comfortable with this idea of a CMS that I edit content in, you know? But I think like, I think most clients aren't ready to make the jump to like, you know what? We're not doing a CMS. We're just kind of editing code directly. So, you know, Netlify would bridge that gap potentially, but this, again, that like, I want to drag and control the page. Like, we've also found that clients to some degree really want that ability. So
I think you
have to offer that.
That's what's so appealing to me about sticking with something like Craft or WordPress is that even if you're building something simple that you've got this like massive wrench that you can use in case something else comes along.
Right. Well, in, you know, you mentioned WordPress. I'm not, you know, it's been a while, a good long while since I've done like a WordPress site, like big time. Mm-hmm. But you know, I situation like that, like you got to think like, who's going to maintain it? And am I going to sit around and maintain this site for the next 12 years?
Sure.
Or is like, or, you know, or should I hand it off to, you know, maybe I hire a junior developer. Like WordPress's ubiquity makes it very strong, makes it a very strong candidate.
Well, I think of like that day, you know, now we had three authors, you know, well, that's all that stuff's built right into WordPress. There's users, you pick the author from a drop down, done. You know, you got the three author thing. You don't have to think about it. It's not like, oh, how are we going to make this happen?
I got to get them a Netlify Teams account. I got to get them onboarded to Netlify.
Right. You know, but all that stuff, I'm not like, that's all just interesting trade-offs, you know? Where was I going with the author thing? The permissions thing, I think, is such a big deal, too, that can be just a weird afterthought sometimes, but it doesn't need to be. Oh, now you've hired a fourth person, and they should be able to write their own posts, but not mess around with anybody else's posts or something. So they're like an author, but not an editor. And then, but really only one of these people should be able to make new users. Well, they're an admin, you know, little stuff like that, that it's kind of like, you just kind of like, well, of course that's in WordPress and Craft and stuff, like, duh, you know? Like,
yeah.
But you don't get stuff like that automatically with other workflow. So as much as you like some static situation, and I do too, sometimes you got to think about that stuff, that the possibilities where you paint yourself into a corner.
I bet that's important for you in WordPress. I mean, you don't want some whatever cold call writer to have like access to every post historically, you know, like dropping their own links to their own websites.
I use literally every single permission level in WordPress for different users. I mean,
so I flipping it back on you, what's like, if you were going to redo WordPress, or sorry, we're not WordPress, CSS Tricks. If you're going to redo CSS Tricks like today, what would you
I can't imagine not picking WordPress, but front end stack, I would maybe change it. I just think, I don't know.
Okay.
I take advantage of every feature WordPress has, all these custom post types and customizing the admin screen and, you know, and custom fields. And I got WooCommerce in there for selling stuff. And I got BBPress in there for forums. And, it feels like it almost like WordPress was made for this site in a way. You know, like I just, and maybe that's the cart horse. There's some stuff there because the site is so old that I've on purpose taken advantage of some of the things that it can do. But my gosh, is it perfect for the site? Kind of, you know, it's not like I can't imagine what it would be like in Craft or something. Like, sure, other CMSs could probably replicate a lot of this stuff. And look at something like Smashing Magazine, which has a ton of feature sets, and they've managed to go Jamstack with it. So it's not like impossible or whatever. But I have no regrets here. I think it's a good system. Backend wise, it's not messy, but it's not great. And lately, I've been very convinced by the idea that building in components is so great for design and development and flow. And like, I wish the site had been architected from components, and then I could have used like a real design system that uses those components. I don't know any other good way of doing that other than JavaScript. You know, like maybe a Vue front end would be cooler, or a React front end, or pick Next or Nuxt or Gatsby or something to build that front end out of, which gives me the components and puts me in a static structure so I can pre-build pages. Maybe a little big these days for pre-building pages. So I'm not sure that's right, but I am kind of envious of working in components front end wise. If not for that, I probably would pick some kind of WordPress thing that's more architectural these days, like, you know, what's Twig and Timber or whatever, that kind of gives you like a like controller view separation. I think I might choose, you know, just after all these years, my theme template is just very big, and I have a functionality plugin that's very big, and it's just that there's a lot going on there and that could be cleaned up, I think. So if I couldn't go all JavaScript front end, I'd want the PHP side to be cleaned up in a way. But no regrets on the stack otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I think you were able to grow CSS Tricks into the Lodge and BB or BuddyPress or whatever, you know, like the forums and the
yeah, those things store. Come and go, like, as well. You know, at the moment, neither of those things are particularly active.
Right. But, you know, like it was at one time, or like, yeah, you know, and it's kind of a good anchor point or source of income or whatever, like a decent, you know, ad impressions or something from the forums. But like, you know, I'm like, doing that yourself, like that's kind of hard, you know, like I don't know, like if you're like, okay, I gotta stand up like a vanilla forums or a Spectrum chat or whatever, and then I gotta do this, and then I gotta, you know, like that's a lot of work. So but it's kind of cool that WordPress allows you to like grow up and add on kind of big features. But like, you did like the Lodge for a while, right? Like paid video subscriptions. Are you still doing that? Or is,
No, it's turned off for now. But I'll tell you, just the other day, I installed WooCommerce again because I'm always toying around with potential ideas. And I'd be like, gosh, I it's stupid not to have something to sell, you know, like even if it's just something little, as long as that's low effort for me, not low effort, but you know what I mean? Like I'm not changing my career to do this. I think it's always nice to have some kind of call to action that can make you money, you know?
That's my, like, Achilles heel. We do the podcast, or, you know, like, I guess I have stuff to sell, but, like, I wish I had a product. I wish I had, like,
Yeah.
Pay me $9.95 and this is what you get. You know, like I don't have that as like a Dave Rupert, you know, and
no, I understand. Don't you want that? I want that too. Like I have CodePen. I have some things like that, but on CSS Tricks specifically, as big of an audience as it has, it doesn't have that. I'd like to build that and I have some ideas for it and it can involve a bunch of different things. But the Lodge, I know just through time, you get to know yourself and what you're capable of more. That was fine. I would do it again if that was my job all day. It's not. CodePen is my job all day.
Right.
So I can't, I would, ultimately I ended up feeling guilty about the idea of people paying monthly for this thing that has kind of out of date videos on it. It wasn't like you're not getting new content every week or month. So I'm not sure that at this point in my life, I would put that back in place just how it was because the guilt got to me.
Can you talk about money? I know you did the Kickstarter and that was like amazing. And everyone was like, I'm going to do a Kickstarter now. But like, was most of the money made up front on the Kickstarter or was it kind of made up like over the long tail?
Yeah. I mean, this was a lot of years ago now, but it was in the, what did it end up at? 70 grand or something all those years ago. And all I did in the Kickstarter was promise that I was going to redesign the site, record some videos of me doing it, and you get access to those videos, but those videos will just be the first of more videos that I plan to shoot, and you'll be a member of this, you know, exclusive club if you back me on Kickstarter. But also, after it goes up, people can pay for it. You'll just get it, like, cheaper from the Kickstarter kind of thing. And I literally did all of that. I came through on it when I said I was going to and stuff, but I ended up making like nothing from the Kickstarter itself, pretty much, I think, because it was so, you know, you got a t-shirt, which was totally expensive to produce and send to everybody. You know, it's like, it's the number that you make on Kickstarter doesn't matter in a sense, because it's like, if your costs per person are high enough, you spend it all fulfilling the things.
Oh yeah. Every time like a Kickstarter, okay, stretch goal. If we get more people, more money, we're going to like explode the scope. And I'm just like, no, please give me the thing. I don't want more scope.
Yeah. When you change the scope just based on numbers, that doesn't work out. Like I understand there's like an emotional, like obviousness to it. You're like, well, we were making $500,000. Now we're making $1 million on this Kickstarter. So we'll give you twice as much. You're like, no, you have twice as many people now that you have to fulfill. I don't know. You get it. It's crazy. Anyway, that happens. Well, taxes, it's just income. It's just straight up income. And depending on where you're at, like if you make $1 million Kickstarter, you're in a freaking high tax bracket. They're going to take half of it. Half of it.
Yeah. Well, and Kickstarter takes 30% or whatever. And then
So now you got a fraction of what was left. You still got to fulfill all these promises. You know, I don't know that how many people lose money on it, but we came damn close. And then you factor in all the stuff that we said we were going to do for the design. Like, well, I'm going to hire these illustrators and hire all these content strategists and all that stuff. The money goes there. It's a wash in the end at best. And then that was the thing, though. Like, that's what Kickstarter's supposed to be. It's supposed to kickstart some future thing that you're doing, not be the sole source of success and income for your thing. So that's literally what happened. I launched the Lodge and then people would sign up and pay for it and stuff. Did I do particularly well on that? Not really. I doubt it was West Boss money.
It's not West Bucks, but it's...
No. I sure as hell didn't make $1 million on it. But then the guilt got to me over why I just shut it down. But like, that doesn't mean you can't be like, well, okay, it's shut down for now, but here's the idea, essentially, Dave. I don't know if I'm actually going to follow through on this or not, but I thought... It's stupid to have a publication called CSS Tricks for 12 years and not have some kind of compendium of the best stuff on there. Like, I feel like I could write a book about CSS. I never have. Not maybe just like the basics of CSS, because that's been done six ways to Sunday. Not that people can't continue to do that. I don't care. But I don't know that I have anything to add to that story necessarily, although we'll see. But how about one called CSS Tricks? You know, like that'd be a pretty good book.
Yeah, just dumb stuff you can do with CSS.
And so, like, you know, yeah. I've already, of course, played around with the idea a little bit, but why not? Then, you know, then it's a book and people like the artifact, sell that thing, you know. And WordPress is like, that's a no-brainer. That's a one-day project to get that going on CSS Tricks because of WordPress. I don't have to do anything. You install freaking WooCommerce, upload a PDF and, you know, I know there's more to it than that. I'm underplaying it, but.
No. I mean, I think that's the smashing model right now, more or less, is kind of try to upcycle some of this content into webinars or, you know, kind of into different like books of some kind, you know, so.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by something really cool. It's an alternative to .com. It's the .design domain name. In general, I'm a big fan of interesting, unique, good URL website names, and especially alternatives to .com. So if you're a designer and you've thought of a sweet name for your website and it isn't available under .com, check out .design. Chances are the domain name you want is waiting for you. You can head over to porkbun.com and use the coupon code SHOPTALK on the checkout page to get your free .design domain name for your website. And yes, you heard that correctly. It's a free year if you go to porkbun.com and use the coupon code SHOPTALK on the checkout page and get a free year of a .design domain name that's bundled with free email hosting, Whois privacy, and SSL certificates. I don't really consider myself a designer, but I didn't want to miss out on the fun of registering a .design domain name, so I registered iPodcastBecauseICan't.design, which you can go check out and see how it worked. But there's plenty of fancy companies using .design, like Airbnb.design, Facebook.design, Uber.design, and Adobe.design, and many more. It's exactly the same, just a domain name. Google doesn't care, and it functions the same way as a .com or .org. It just looks a little more interesting. So go check out porkbun.com and use coupon code SHOPTALK at checkout to get a free year of a .design domain name. Our thanks to Porkbun for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
Well, let's talk e-commerce for a minute. You're charged with making an e-commerce site. Let's say it's a car parts store. They have 10,000 products. It's in Magento now. But that's not Greenfield. So scratch all that. They just want to sell it, and they have a large product catalog. But you know, you're making this thing from scratch. There's going to be a lot of data entry, and you're going from scratch e-commerce. What are you going to do, Dave? Do you Shopify it for all that, or do you pick something like Magento or WooCommerce? You certainly wouldn't write from scratch, would you? Or would you?
No, I think from scratch, and I've kind of done that, you know, that's like a nightmare. I mean, so like if it's like Dave Rupert, I'm going to sell a video or a package, a bundle of videos on my website. You need to like make this back end for like the distribution of this stuff, you know, the education management software. But I would probably just use like Stripe integration or try to start there. Right. Mm-hmm. But the minute it's like multiple products, car parts or whatever, I would honestly, Shopify is a very compelling piece. I built a Shopify site a long time ago and it was actually pretty enjoyable. You just like write the templates locally and shepherd them up to the main site. And then it's like, working. And for me though, it's the payment processing, that security and like the account management and stuff like that, that Shopify gives you. And you don't want to F with that, like on your own personal basis. Like if it got bigger, like I don't, you know, it would be hard for me to be like, maybe it's like in the search functionality or something like that. Like where does Shopify, you know, bail out? I don't know that quite yet. But like, I would be curious, like what people's experience is, because, and I put probably Shopify and WooCommerce on the same level. Does that make sense? Like, if I already had WordPress,
one's hosted and one's not, you know.
Yeah, if I already had WordPress, I'd probably just use WooCommerce or something, you know. But Shopify is so compelling. But then, you know, if I needed something bigger, I don't know. I mean, I've tried to do Magento before and it was just rough stuff for me. I mean, it was not comfortable or good, but you'd have to use something. I mean, but
there's different levels, you know, three t-shirts is like, oh, who cares? Use whatever, you know, but then 100 products is a special scale, you know, that probably is particularly well suited for Shopify, but 10,000, 100,000, does Shopify fall over at that level? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And I mean, you know, I think that probably the point, you know, I'm trying to think like there's a company in Austin called Tiff's Treats, right? It's a cookie, thing. Mm-hmm. Like they, you order online and you can send somebody or yourself cookies, right? Like order online, cookies show up at the door. And I wonder what it's built on, because my thinking is like Shopify is like, cool, yeah, we'll take the order, but we're not going to like dispatch a driver or do anything like that. You know, like we don't cover that part of anything. So like, maybe you want a whole end-to-end system that manages that, right? Like that can dispatch a cookie delivery driver, sick. You know?
I'm so hungry now. This looks amazing, dude. Incredible cookies. They have an app where you track the car on your way to your house with the hot baked cookies.
Yeah, and this is like a local cookie shop, you know? It's not like, it's pretty wild for like what it is, right? Like it's not like, anyway. And then they do, okay, yeah, the sandwiches, get out of here. But then, so what you want is the Snickerdudes, okay? The Snickerdudes is what's going to really pump up your jam, you know what I mean?
It does. So. It doesn't, it's like something doesn't match up there. It's like, what did somebody like have a trust fund here and they just threw this kitchen sink at the thing?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, just they have, but it's worth it and it's a great business. But, you know, and I mean, but like you could, whatever, cake shop or something, wedding cakes or, you know, like there's 100 other like small businesses where you have to do the fulfillment too, right? Like, so I don't think like Shopify or anything helps you on that end, you know? So like, what do you do? You know, I don't know what I would do, but it, but yeah, I would probably do something like,
I would too. I think so. Just because it's so, so tried and true, you know, and they're, it's just nice. It's just nice software, you know. It's just that, like, what are the pain points? Got to figure those out early on. Talk to some people or whatever. And I guess that's it, really. And just be comfortable with the fact that it's hosted by them, not you. So there's limits here. And what are they? You gotta figure out.
Yeah, my brother does a lot of Shopify for people, so. You can hire him if you're interested, but
you know, it's always appealed to me for a long time. This is they're ancient, but it used to be called FoxyCart. Now it's called Foxy.io. And the, kind of the fun mm-hmm. part about it was that like they're not a CMS. They're just this like thin checkout layer on top. So let's say you had like a WordPress site where you posted all these products, but you didn't use WooCommerce. They were just, it was just a CMS or a craft site that didn't use Craft Commerce or whatever. You just use whatever CMS you want to and publish products. And then as long as you like know what the price is of that product and other like metadata about the product, you can load the FoxyCart JavaScript, Foxy.io JavaScript on that page. And it deals with like the cart and the whole checkout process and stuff like on top of whatever CMS you want it, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of cool. But then like, does it do inventory? I mean, it probably does, but do you want that in your own database or theirs? Or like, where is that data and what's the deal? You know, you got to find out the rough edges of all this stuff.
Have you ever had like a contractor come to your house and they're like, sure. And then they're like, okay, you owe me $100,000 for your toilet. And you're like, okay, do you take card? And they're like, yeah. And they just like whip out a Square or like some weird Android thing, you know, like, and then they just whoop, swipe your card or like they punch it into like a web app that's on their phone. Those are cool to me too. And tech, you know, that's like e-commerce. I don't know what holotype that fits in, but it's like a app, you know, and it's all very interesting to me because, you know, I saying like I do Shopify, but I totally forget like, oh, what if you need a point of sale? You know, maybe Square is the tool for that. You know, maybe like you do need the physical point of sale. Like, oh my gosh, what do you do there? You know, so.
Yeah, that native app thing throws a twist in all this, doesn't it too? Like what if you need a, it's gotta at some point become an Android, iOS app, you know?
Right.
That's tricky stuff. Hey, let's, you know, just for the sake of this, do a more complicated one. Let's say like Dribbble, right? Because everybody can picture this, right? It's just, it's like love content. You have user accounts and you upload photos to them that are under your account. And then there's following and liking and commenting and stuff. It's kind of like a CRUD app, you know, searching mm-hmm. and stuff. But, you know, you want to build it fast and good and last a long time and not have a bunch of technical debt and stuff. Greenfield, Dave, what are you looking at?
Originally, Dribbble was written in Ruby on Rails, which I think was very suitable for it because it was like upload a shot, view a shot, here's an index of shots, here's a list of popular shots. You know, like it was very kind of, I don't know, low on the interaction, but now it's like liking, commenting, you know, big old tag interface for every single post, or, you know, like there's a lot going on now. And even the whole, like, are you available to hire and stuff like that. So, there's a lot of features. I would probably do something like a service, or sorry, maybe, a client side app, like a Nuxt or Vue, because that's what I like. Probably Nuxt, just to get the routing right. But because I feel like you could rebuild it pretty quickly, and start getting those interactions together. And,
what is Nuxt giving you here? It's a router ant, but isn't it a static site thing too, or not necessarily?
Yeah, it can build static sites, but it can also like do as much as you need, right? Like it can build out the template and then like, so it's not all entirely just a empty div or whatever. Like,
where's the data? Tag.
Well, that you'd have to connect to something. Mm-hmm. And you know, at that point, it'd probably just be like a weird Postgres thing. Maybe it is even still a Rails app on the back end that you just go fetch data from. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm comfortable with that. I'm sure there's like a, is there a better thing? I don't know. I don't know. What's the better solution for like a CRUD app?
Where you like need some controllers.
I just need the service, right? Like, I mean, Facebook, of course, is like some, you know, 7 gigabyte PHP thing that does that, that's compiled to C. But like, what is,
I don't know. I would think you'd be, I think you'd be looking at what's the least I can do that gives me a very configurable GraphQL interface is what I,
yeah, see, that's, and that still seems like Rails to me. You know,
yeah,
what I
maybe
mean?
Maybe it is.
Like
yeah.
Like a very just thin Rails that's maybe I ditch Active Record and you, or maybe you're still using Active Record, but it's like, you just write a GraphQL client. I mean, you know,
you think somebody would have come into that territory these days, like some fancy AWS thing or something that's like, you don't need Rails, just use this directly. It's faster or something.
But, you know, I'm not like promoting this feature at all, but Azure did have a thing where you could just chuck JSON at it and it would build out the database for you. Like you just give it some JSON and it's like, cool, I can figure out what to do with that. And it would just like write out a database like for you. So now you just have a service that you hit. So you just say, hey, service, give me, store this. Okay, here it is back. Like, so that's pretty cool, but I probably underutilized and probably also like, I have no idea. So I shouldn't even comment, but it's,
you're
just
like in like a Vue front end with some Nuxt help and then just something on the back end, probably Rails.
That's what I would think. And I think GraphQL is probably in there too.
I see GraphQL over this thing. It doesn't necessarily need to be, but like, I don't know, with all the different, like, hey, this thing needs this data, this thing needs this data, this thing needs this data. Sure as hell is not going to be REST.
Because you like call for shots or pens or whatever, right? And then you immediately need the author for the pen, you know, like, and you can set up Rails to like return the author, you know, for when you get shots, but like you actually only want to do that if you need to, you know, like, and then how deep do you go? Do you need all the comments? That's another data query, you know, like, and so like, you only want to do that if you have to. So,
Because it was just the other show where you mentioned that like a Rails Vue thing would have been kind of like a fun stack for you. So that's kind of
Rails
like,
plus Vue would be awesome. I still would think that would be awesome. Yeah. And maybe that's what I'm looking at here. The only part is like reactivity. You know, I think a lot of people choose, you know, React or Vue or whatever for like that cool, like I changed a piece of state and now the whole app responded, you know?
Yeah.
But like actually doing that, like watching a like counter tick up, you know, like that's kind of hard. Like now you need like some like pub sub thing like in there, you know, like where does that come from? Are you doing that with like, you know, Rails has action cable, I guess you could do that, but like,
yeah, I mean,
how
that's,
are you doing
that's
that?
A, like, that's bread and butter GraphQL. It's a mutation. Run the mutation.
Really? So you GraphQL can just like live stream mutations?
It's not just absolutely. There's GraphQL subscriptions if you needed to, but what you do in this case is like when you click the like button, it runs the mutation that augments the like up one, and it just it sends it back through GraphQL the same way that you got the data in the first place.
There's like a subscription going.
So. Yeah, I think subscriptions are more about live updating of data. So you could, you know, you could have, you'd set up a GraphQL subscription if you're expecting some server-side data to change and you want, you know, like a WebSocket kind of thing for it to change the state on the way back in. But a mutation doesn't have to be live, you know. And you'd write it optimistically, right? That's how we... generally that like button is the perfect example for that. You click like and it just on the front end it just behaves exactly like you liked it and it fires off a network request, in this case a mutation to change that data, and just assumes that it works. You know, if it doesn't, you can always deal with that and throw an error or unlike it or something, but generally you don't even bother. It's like such an unimportant action, you know.
Yeah like you just turn it off and say whatever, oops. But I guess like So then I could subscribe to that data stream if I expect it to get real hot and change or whatever, or if you're like making a real time dashboard or something.
Yeah, like if you're building a flight tracker app or real time thing at all. Yeah, but so a lot of stuff. I definitely would think in that way these days. Be like, what if we're green fielding here? Just real time everything. You know.
Yeah.
Because then it makes very modern and fancy. Yeah
well, and that, you know, you gotta plan for that. Like that's I think I always think of like Graph as like a REST competitor, but I really probably need to dig into it more. So it's REST on the client side, or Active Record on the client maybe. So I don't know. It's like you just describe what you want.
I can't even tell you. I feel like I talk about it more than I know about it. You know, my usage of it is like, you know, I open up Graphical, which is their little like visual thing that chips with it, and try to like get myself a query going. That's the data that I need, and then use that query. I'm very much like most comfortable with just asking GraphQL for the data that I need. Mm-hmm. And then using it, and that's about it. You know, the subscription and mutation stuff is still like not, I don't write a million of them a day, you know, but my team does.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's cool. I think I would, I think that would definitely be a part of like my modern stack. So I'm kind of curious, who was it? The Sandy guys, they were kind of like, we've iterated on GraphQL, and like, I would be kind of interested in.
Oh,
like,
I think this is absolutely fascinating. I have this all loaded in my brain because I wrote about it. I just haven't published it yet. But what they were saying was like really interesting, right? Like if you're just handed a GraphQL API, that's a little unfortunate, because part of the strength of GraphQL is being able to change what's in there, like customize it to your needs. And their example was like how many authors are there on a blog? Like your GraphQL API might not have that in there. You might have to request them all and count them or something, which is kind of not really the spirit of GraphQL. If you want that, you should look at your author's query and return a count and then use the count. That's kind of the...
Right, because I might do something different if there's 2,000 comments on a post versus, you know, like...
Oh, yeah.
At that point, absolutely. I want to paginate, you know, or whatever. Yeah.
We've had to adjust our thinking in some way. Like for a moment in our templates, once in a while, we'd string together a URL. You'd be like, oh, what's the link to details view? Oh, well, it's... You know, it's username/details/slug/whatever. You know, you're like, you've done that a million times, I'm sure, right? Like string concatenate the URL together.
Yeah.
And we've decided to like stop that. Be like, no. When you request this item, the GraphQL response for that item should have within it URLs that represent all the places it could be. So you have to like adjust your thinking and be like, no. We should never. That's just one example of a million examples where you're like, if the API could have given me that data, you should update the API to give you that data. And now it's kind of great because URLs in CodePen are a little weird because sometimes they have team in front of them because it's a team thing or something like that. Like probably a mistake early on in the days, but that's the way it is now. So now that the API deals with it, we don't have logic in our templates that say, well, if it's a team, string concatenate the URL this way. And if it's a user, string concatenate the URL this way. Doesn't matter. You just use it. Just URLs.details, and it gives you the right URL. So you have to adjust your thinking. Okay. Every time you GraphQL could be giving you something that would be really useful and uncomplicate things. Go to, in our case, it's a Rails, you know, it's like a Rails model thing, you know, which probably strengthens your argument that it should be Rails, and like adjust what the API is giving you. Or in my case, write an email, to, you know, go into Slack and ask the developer to give me the right data that I want. And where I was going with that is like, be, now we have that control. If you're just given a GraphQL API, you don't have that control. So it's not the same awesomeness. And they're saying, well, we have this Grok thing. You don't need to ask nobody nothing if you have this thing, because it is the query language. You want the count? Run the count. You want a some special data from it? You don't have to ask anybody or update anything. There's no configuration layer. It just is of the language.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's smart. See, that's the, and not like, I think GraphQL is probably a safe bet or whatever, but it is sort of this like, what's the next, you know, like I'm always like, what's the people have tried this out a few times. And the same way as CSS and JS, mm-hmm. I mean, which y'all just posted on CSS Tricks about that, but it's just like, what? Okay. Cool. What's next? Or like, what's the next iteration of this flavor of?
I don't know. I couldn't even tell you exactly. In some ways, it's like whatever Apollo does in a way, because you also kind of got to remember that GraphQL is just like a spec of what happens. But a lot of usage of GraphQL is actually like an abstracted layer on top of that, you know, which is like, what is the client and server? What kind of niceties did they deliver to you? What is the caching situation like and the decaching situation like? And all that is kind of delivered to you through Apollo or other kind of competing tools. But Apollo is kind of the big one. And so it starts to get confusing. Like, what is the language itself? And what is like a nicety that's being given to me by some abstraction?
Yeah. Well,
that probably is about it, huh?
Yeah, no, well, that's cool. I mean, this is fun to think about. It's, you know, I don't know. The other day I was just like, oh, I should write an app. And I just, you know, that's a terrible idea. I was trying to plan a talk. Why would I write an app while I'm trying to plan a talk? But, you know, I write a little note in my notebook and say, hey, here's a dumb idea you had. But you know, it'd be, I don't know. Like, it is sort of like a, how would I do this? And I don't, you know, technologies we didn't talk about are like Firebase and things like that. And it's just like, how would I set all this up? I don't know, you know?
Yeah, well, we talked about real time a little bit. Think of how nice that, I mean, I've used Firebase for stuff in Firestore in the past, but we dipped our toes in it a little bit. What if you just used it greenfield and just did everything in it? It would be super great. For some reason, because everything would be real time. It's not real time yet. Oh, well, just use the real time API instead of the query API. Cool. Now it is real time. Amazing. You know, have that be your source of truth, and you're locked in as hell. So sorry, move. Too bad. You know.
Yeah, Google shuts it down. Peace out to your company. Well, whoops. So, but not that happens. It's interesting. Or like. All their limitations become your limitations. Does that make sense? Like that's a bummer
pricing
too,
changes,
right? Like
become your pricing changes.
Yeah, or like even like you know, like associating a user with a product or something here or a post or whatever in Firebase is kind of weird. You know, like you have to like redo your whole data structure, sort of. You know, like do you want to show all posts or do you want to show all posts by user? You know, like you have to decide those things kind of up front, and that's like. I don't know. That for me is like, I get hit with a roadblock. I'm like, what do I, you know? So their limitations become your limitations. And so you just have to figure that out, right? So
so much to talk about. We could go on forever, I'm sure. So many tech choices.
Yeah, maybe let's do a show next week. We'll have a podcast next week. How's that sound? We'll talk about more web stuff. That sounds good. Let's wrap it up. Thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcast. Editors. Be sure to star heart favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. And follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. Head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Shoptalkshow.com.